Well, I quickly call your attention to James. James chapter 5. That's where we're going to be this evening. It's been a while, but we finally made it to the last chapter. And we'll have several messages out of this chapter. And so we're not close to finishing it, at least not for a few weeks anyway. Tonight, I want to preach for us to not, because I don't think this includes anybody that's here, but James changes his audience. You know, one of the things that I have been mentioning over and over and over as we go through the book, who was the book written to? It was written to Christians. It was written to the brethren, those that were scattered abroad. Throughout the first four chapters, often the word brethren is used. But there's a little change that is in our text tonight. And I think that probably what has happened at this group of Christians that James is addressing, probably what has happened is there are some people that are wealthy that are maybe within the circle of influence or the sphere of friendship of some of these people that are these Christians that he's writing. And as he looks at these people, he's watching their lives and how that they're interacting with other people. And their behavior, their attitude, their conduct of their life is not saying believer, believer, believer. It's saying unbeliever, unbeliever. Because of the way that certain people that are kind of hanging out with God's people behave. And it's all because of one thing. Money. It's all about money to the people that we're talking about tonight. And I think that James probably is coming off, whenever I read this passage, it's almost as though he's in the spirit of being an Old Testament prophet. You can almost visualize him being somebody like a Jeremiah. I mean, Jeremiah preached for decades and had no conversions. But he wanted to quit, but there was something in his soul. And as a matter of fact, it said that it was like fire in my bones. I had to say something. And it's almost as though James is to that point. I mean, let's face it, he's been getting on we Christians pretty hard. But now he changes it a little bit. And so if we look at our passage, we're only going to cover about six verses tonight. And I'm going to do that as quickly as possible because we do have a business meeting tonight. Not a long one, but we do have a business meeting. But I want us to look at basically four words tonight that we can just kind of pick out of the context of the passage. These are things that these unsaved people that are just kind of hanging around and just kind of living their life in the world, even though they're hanging out with God's people and God's people are looking at them, he's almost saying, don't get infected by this attitude, right? And so I want us to look at these four simple words. The first thing that I want you to see is I want you to see the danger that money will bring to people. Look at verse 1. Go to now. If we were saying that today, we would say, come now, pay attention to this, you rich men. You see, he's not talking to the brethren. Because earlier in our letter, he says, brethren, brethren. But here, he doesn't say rich brethren, he says rich men. And most commentators think that he's addressing unsaved people at this point, and that he is expecting God's people to observe what he's saying, because let's face it, Christians can fall into the same temptations that unsaved people can. Is that not what he told young Timothy? He said, you be careful when you're young. And he said, if not, you could fall into the snare of the devil. And so we have those same type temptations. And he says, come on now, you rich men, weep and howl. In other words, there's some trouble coming your way. You get ready, you're going to have some miseries that come your way. He uses that word miseries in the middle of our verse, and it has the idea of a woe. There's trouble that's coming. And may I say that just because a person has money does not exempt them from trouble? I'll guarantee you that it doesn't matter if it's the richest person in the world that can afford the greatest health care, medical care, they would be willing to give everything they had if they could get their health back. They would give everything they've got to get their wife's health back or their kids' health back. There comes a time, and I told the folks at the funeral this on Sunday, I said, as a pastor, I can do a lot of things. I can come along beside a family and I can hold their hand. I can come along beside someone and I can put my arms around them and embrace them as a brother or sister in Christ, and I can try to console them to a certain degree. There are times when I can reach in my pocket, and if they needed 40 bucks, I could give them money. There are times if they needed food, I could take food to them. If they needed a coat, I could go buy them a coat, or our church could go buy a coat. I heard the other day about a school for underprivileged kids, and there were like 30 kids that were in this one particular class, and they canceled the school because they did not have coats that these kids wore to school. They would come and they would say, where's your coat? We don't have a coat. And I said, if you'll get sizes, we'll have 40 people in our church that'll say, I'll buy a kid a coat if we had sizes. I mean, we would do what we could do. But there'll come a time when you can only go so far. If your child was on a hospital bed and they only had an hour or two to live, you would gladly take their place, but you can't do it. You can't. And so these rich men, he said, you got trouble that's coming. There's a danger that's coming. If you look at the latter part of the verse, he said, these miseries, these woes are coming upon you. And I want you to notice the phrase, shall come upon you. Do you know in the Greek that means it'll swiftly come? Now you think about this. How fast does a day go by for you now? Wasn't it 30 minutes ago when you closed your eyes last night and you're about to do it again in 2 or 3 hours? I lay down at night, and every single night of my life, I have this thought. I just laid down just a few minutes ago, and now I'm laying down again. My day's gone. And so that danger, those woes, they're coming fast. And so if we get all caught up in just hoarding money, there's a huge danger to that. Well, not only is there a danger, but I believe that there's a deceit that we see. First of all, there's a deceit toward ourselves. You know, we have a tendency to think that we're smart, that, you know, we're wise, we've got good discernment. And as far as the world's concerned, we probably do. But there are some things that we think about ourselves that just are not true. We have a tendency to think that, you know, that we can just succeed at pretty much whatever we want to succeed at. And maybe it's because we were born in America and we have the idea of the rugged individualism and all of that kind of stuff. But the bottom line is we can be deceived within our own selves. There are times when I've deceived myself. I told you about the humorous thing that happened not too long ago when I thought that, well, I'll just clean that vent out on the top of that roof. Wasn't anybody around but me, and I'm up on top of that roof, and I'm thinking, what are you doing up here? I deceived myself into thinking that I could do that. And all I'm thinking is, now I'm holding on to a pipe about to slide off of this roof, and I'm going to hit some concrete. And then I'm praying, Lord, if you get me off this roof, I won't ever do anything this stupid again. But I was deceived thinking, no big deal. I can stand up there at an angle. I can ram that snake down that pipe. Everything will be great. Everything wasn't great when I got there. When I'm up there and I'm thinking, there's concrete, but there's grass over there. At one time, jumping that far, if I was falling, wouldn't be that hard of a problem to hit grass. Now, you know, when you got about a 3-inch vertical instead of a 30-inch, maybe you don't jump like you used to. Well, I know that's the case. I used to like to play softball. I tried that about 4 or 5 years ago, played one night, hurt for 3 days. Oh, it was horrible, horrible. And so there's a deceit. You say, well, how are these guys deceived? Well, first of all, it says their riches are corrupted. The Greek word there means that they are rusted through. Well, what is the things that are rusted through? Well, verse 3 tells us it's gold and silver that's cankered. So first of all, their money is now no good. It was something that they thought they were good with. They thought, man, we've hoarded this, everything's great. But then there's also the garments. Those garments are moth-eaten. In other words, they're not good for the man that owns them. They're not even good to give to anybody else because the moths have eaten them. Well, how does a man value a garment? Well, in ancient times, it was a very special person that had certain types of garments. Do you remember in the book of Acts, there was a lady that was one of the early converts in Philippi. Her name was Lydia. And what did she do? She was a seller of purple. She would dye those robes and the royalty would buy it because of the colors of it. And so you would have people that would buy these fancy robes. Do you remember the story of Achan over in the book of Joshua? They cross over into the promised land. They begin to conquer, and all of a sudden they conquered Jericho. And then what is the command that Joshua gives? Nobody takes anything. All of this goes to God. But there's a man, and what does he do? He finds a little wedge of gold. And then he takes a Babylonian garment and he hides it in his tent. Well, a few days later, they get ready to go fight over at a place called Ai, a little small, you know, little village. Won't be a big deal. I mean, after all, Jericho with all of its walls fall, Ai, nothing to it. And then they suffer a defeat. Why? Because there was a man named Achan that had buried a Babylonian garment in his tent. He looked at it and he said, man, that is one good looking piece of clothes right there. I want to wear that. One of these days, somebody's going to throw a ball, and when my wife dresses up, I'm going to put this on and I'm going to be styling and profiling. That's what they were thinking. And so garments were a big deal. You could tell who was royalty and who wasn't. But what does James say? He said, you guys that are unsaved, he said, I got news for you. Your silver and gold is rusted. Your garments are going to be moth-eaten. It's cankered. And what's going to happen? The rust of them shall be a witness against you. In other words, you look at that rust that's on that gold and on that silver, and something in your conscience goes, man, that wasn't good. That wasn't a good decision. Oh, you think it was great. You think it was wonderful, but it's a witness against you. And not only that, it says, and shall eat your flesh as it were a fire. In other words, not only is your conscience going to bother you, but that lifestyle is going to consume you. It's just going to wear you out. And do you know that a sinful lifestyle will consume you? I want you to hold that the place here in James, and I want you to flip over to Psalm 32. I want you to see this. Psalm 32. And I want you to look at verse 3. When I kept silence, when I did not confess my sin, when I just let sin have its free reign in my life, my bones waxed old through my roaring, my groaning, all the day long. For day and night thy hand was heavy upon me. My moisture is turned into the drought of summer. And finally, David says, I acknowledge my sin and my iniquity. I've not hid it. I confess it. And then he says, God, you're my hiding place. But boy, when that sin was in his life, he said, my bones waxed old. He said, I was drying up. And that's what James is preaching to these guys. He said, it's going to eat at your flesh as it were a fire. He said, you have heaped together treasure together for the last days. What does Luke chapter 12 tell us? Oh, there's a guy there in Luke chapter 12, and he says, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I've got a bunch of money, but so I want more. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to tear my barns down. I'm going to build bigger barns. And then it says, thou fool, tonight your soul's going to be required of you. There's people that absolutely are self-deceived about money. I heard the story years ago, and I'm sure it's probably just a fable type story for a moral to be taught. But the story is told that there was a ship that had 100 immigrants on it. And this ship was in a storm and it blew it off course. And they shipwrecked on an island, totally surrounded by water. They were out of the normal trade routes, and so they really were not expecting to be rescued for a while. And so they got together and they decided they would send out an exploration party. And they began to go out and they began to look around, and a day later they came back and they said, you're not going to believe it, but we have found a gold mine. A gold mine. And everybody got excited. They said, man, that's great. And so all during the spring, they're digging in the gold mine. Oh, everything they could find, they're heaping it up. All through spring. All through the summer. Oh, I mean, they're just piling it up. Well, their food stores begin to get smaller. And they're getting more and more scarce. And hurriedly they said, hey, we've got to grow something in case we don't get rescued. And so they grabbed some seeds that they had. They began to take some trees down, and they began to try to plant the seed. The only problem was winter got there before the seeds could grow. and they all starved to death, and they looked at the gold as a curse instead of as a blessing. Do you know that there comes a time when there is so much money that you really would be a miserable person if you had that much? Somebody says, well, I've never been that place. I haven't either. But can you imagine, let's say that you were a billionaire. And you've got people, and they look at you, and all of a sudden they go, you know, I could get $10 million out of him if I kidnapped his kid. You know, I could get $10 or $15 million if I grabbed his grandkid. And the next thing you know, you're worried about your grandkids being kidnapped, and you're worried about somebody breaking in and killing you in your sleep, and you're worried about all that stuff. You say, oh, I wouldn't be worried about that. Well, if you got any sense, you would be. Several years ago, there was a man that won the lottery in Alabama. And he was living large. He thought, man, this is great. 3 months later, they found him dead. You know why? Because his sister had him killed so she could inherit the money. There comes a time if you've got so much, you're miserable. If you think about some of the people that you've heard about, oh, there comes a time when too much is too much. You know, a lot's just way more than is needed. But just think about what people in the Lord's work could do with some of that. You know, at one time, John D. Rockefeller was the richest man that lived. As a matter of fact, probably in his dollars compared to the dollars today, he probably still would be compared to somebody like a Gates or a Buffett. The last year of his life, he was 84 years old. The last year of his life, he gave away $586 million. Gave that much away to charity. He gave away more than anybody else in the country made that year. And somebody, they would just say, oh man, he didn't know what to do with his money. Do you know that they ask him, what is the thing that's most important that happened in your life? And this is a paraphrase of his quote. He said, when I was a 16-year-old boy, I trusted Jesus as my personal Savior. And the second greatest thing that ever happened is I married the woman that I married. They didn't talk about all the business that, you know, that he succeeded at. I mean, this guy had a brilliant mind. I mean, he was an ecological type guy before anybody else. Everybody else is pouring their refuse off in rivers. What is he doing? He's making kerosene out of his. He's making things like Vaseline out of his. And everybody else is dumping theirs in rivers. Did you know that the guy was a member of a Baptist church in Chicago? Taught Sunday school. And all I'm thinking is, that's like Truett Cathy. Truett Cathy, the founder of Chick-fil-A, that guy taught Sunday school at the Jonesboro First Baptist for years. Those are guys that knew what God wanted them to do, and God just kept piling it on. Oh, not these guys. Oh, there was deceit. But then there was also defrauding. Look with me at verse 4. Listen to what these guys did. Behold, the hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields. In other words, you've got some field hands. And what are they doing? They've got their farm implements, and they're out there with the sheaves, and they're cutting the wheat down. They're cutting the rye down. They're working with the livestock. And they have reaped down those fields, which is of you, kept back by fraud. In other words, these guys were defrauding their field hands. There's two ways that in the Old Testament that a person could be defrauded that was a common laborer. And I guess if we were going to think of an analogy, when I was a little boy, I never was a part of anything like this, but I remember hearing my grandparents talk about sharecropping. And some of you have heard those terms, and maybe your parents had been a part of that. But sharecroppers was where you would have a family come in, and they didn't own the land, but they got to live on the land, maybe in an extra house, and then they would participate when the crop came in, and they would get a certain percentage of it to live off of. Well, you've got these laborers, and they have worked in these fields, but now they're being defrauded out of their money. They're not getting any of the grain that was promised. They're not getting any of the kid goats that were born. They're not getting any of the calves that were born. And what are they saying? They're saying, no, you're not getting any of that. Get off my land. Well, these guys, they weren't getting paid. And then whenever they did get paid, they weren't getting a full payment. Did Paul not tell young Timothy that the ox that treads out the corn is worthy of his money? In other words, if somebody is doing a job and you have agreed to pay them, give them their money when they're done. Just pay what you owe. But not these guys. Oh, no. They're taking these poor people and they're taking advantage of them. So they're not paying them. But then in the Old Testament, there's a second way. Did you know that most of the time, after a person worked, they would get paid that day? Do you remember the story of the man that hired the person at the beginning of the day? And he said, I'll give you a penny. Then he went back at noon and hired another person and said, if you'll work the rest of the day, I'll give you a penny. And at the end of the afternoon, just before they were about to break, he said to another guy, you work for another hour or two, and he said, I'll give you a penny. Well, at the end of the day, he's going penny, 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 which was a day's wage. It's not like a copper coin as we see it today. It was what is considered a normal day's wage. And the guy that worked all day long, he's going, wait a minute. These guys didn't work as long as I did, and you've given them the exact same thing. And the man said, have I done you wrong? And he goes, well, I worked longer, but our agreement was I would give you a day's wage for a day's work. My agreement with him was I'll give him a day's wage for a half a day's work. I gave him a day's wage for a couple hours' work. Is it not mine to give? And we may look at that and go, well, that's not really fair. But is it not fair? They all agree to it. But the point I'm trying to make was, at the end of the day, everybody got paid. And so, these men were saying, can I have my money? You're not getting your money today, buddy. And so they were defrauding. They needed it more than the wealthy did. And so what did they do? Well, it says they cried out to God. And what happened? It entered into the ears of the Lord of the Sabaoth. What is Sabaoth? It's not necessarily the same thing as the Sabbath. The Sabaoth is an Old Testament word which means host or armies. You have the Lord of the armies, the Lord of the host. That word Sabaoth is used 261 times in the Old Testament. Matter of fact, this past Sunday night, whenever I was preaching about David, and David and Goliath were posturing with their words. And David said, the Lord of hosts will deliver you into my hand. That word host there is the Lord of Sabaoth. He'll be the one that will deliver it. It's no wonder that he starts off by saying, your woes are coming upon you, buddy. I mean, when you begin to cheat people, and you begin to defraud people, You get ready, because those cries have been into God's ears. And so you've got a defrauding that's taken place. Oh, but then there's a destruction, verse 5 and 6. You've lived in pleasure. That has the idea that you've lived like a prodigal. How did the prodigal son live? Oh, the Bible describes it. He lived in riotous living. I mean, he was living large every day. I mean, he was partying with the party people. He was going out and just blowing it right and left. I mean, he was just living it up. He was the prodigal. And that's the idea when it says, you've lived in pleasure. You've lived where there was no restraints on you whatsoever. And he said, you've been wanton. That means you've been self-indulgent. Everything has been about you. Oh, you weren't concerned about helping the widow lady. You remember in James chapter 1, what does it say about pure religion? Oh, it's to visit the fatherless and those widows. Oh, you weren't concerned about that. Oh, no, you were self-indulgent. It was all about you and what you wanted in your pleasure. And so, he makes an analogy. He said, you have nourished your hearts as in the day of slaughter. Now get the picture. He is making an analogy. He's calling these guys cows. Now you think about the prodigal son, that story. One of the things that took place was they had a fatted calf. They had that calf stalled up. He couldn't get out and run out in the pasture at all. They had him in a tight place, and all he did was just eat and eat and eat and eat. Why? Because they were fattening him up, and every day he's thinking, well, I got it made. I mean, I'm doing good. I mean, he's looking over the fence, and all he's seeing these other cows out there, and what are they doing? They're not getting grain. Oh, no, they're foraging for whatever they can find on the ground. And all the time, he's too stupid to know that they're getting ready to knock him in the head or cut his throat. And that's what he pictures these guys. He said, you have nourished your hearts as in a day of slaughter. Do you know there's a day of judgment that's coming? It's coming. We have people that it's just all about them. Back in the 80s, there was a dictator in the Philippines. And I think his first name was Ferdinand and his last name was Marcos. And the people in the Philippines had a coup, and they ousted him, and the U.S. government helped to get him out of there before they could kill him. And do you know when they finally got out and they began to unpack, do you know that his wife, whose name was Imelda, do you know that she had made sure that she had 3,000 pair of shoes that were brought with her? 3,000 pair of shoes. And so, these rich people, they're just living for themselves. Oh, but the day of slaughter's coming. When I think of a slaughter, I think of things like the Battle of Armageddon, where it talks about in Revelation chapter 19 how that the Lord's going to come back on a white horse, and out of his mouth goes a sharp two-edged sword, and with it he smites the nations of the earth. What about the great white throne judgment when those people that are unsaved are literally going to be taken and hurled into the lake of fire? Oh, do you not think that's a day of slaughter? Oh, I do. I do. Well, look at verse 6 quickly. You have condemned and killed the just, and he doth not resist you. In other words, they look at somebody that's just a good man. Just a good guy. And they cause him harm or kill him. Whenever I think about this, two Old Testament passages come to mind. One of them is in Kings, and there's a wicked man named Ahab, and there's a godly man named Naboth. I'm going to preach on this one day before long. But Naboth had a vineyard that he had inherited from his daddy, and his daddy had inherited it from his daddy, and it was next to the king's garden or his palace. Oh, and Naboth took pride in that land. Him and he worked in those vineyards. I mean, he kept them pruned. He kept them fertilized. And I mean, that was just one beautiful, beautiful vineyard. And Ahab looked at it one day and he said, I think I'm going to buy that. And he went to Naboth and he said, I want to buy your vineyard. And Naboth said, I'm sorry, King, but this has been in my family, and I can't sell it. Now, come on now, I'm the king. I'll give you whatever you want. I'm sorry, it's not for sale, no matter what price. And old Ahab goes back to the palace, and he's sulking. And old Jezebel comes along and looks at him and says, what's the matter with you? Well, Naboth wouldn't sell me his vineyard. Well, don't you worry about it, big boy. I'll get it for you. And here she is, this powerful, powerful, rich woman. She gets people to lie against Naboth. We heard Naboth curse God. Naboth goes, I didn't curse God. Yes, you did. You cursed God. And what did they do? They took him out and they killed him. And they took the land from him, and Ahab had his vineyard. That's the picture. Where that you take advantage of someone that is weaker. And then also I think about Isaiah 53. And in Isaiah 53, what do you have? You've got a prophecy about the Lord Jesus. And what does it say? He was led as a lamb before the slaughter, yet he opened not his mouth. You got good people and they just take it. And you've got these wicked, wicked men that say, yeah, we're good guys. But behind the scenes, they take and they take and they take. Why? Because they know that God's people won't resist. I want to tell you something. The Lord of the Sabaoth will make all things right one day. He'll make all things right. Well, I don't know if you've enjoyed it, but bless God, I have. I want to step back and I want to look and I want to say, Lord, don't let me act like that man right there. Lord, don't let me act like that woman right there. Dear God, keep me humble. Keep me humble. Father, I want to thank you for a good night.